And that makes you a really strong road team. Going into Boston, getting two wins, coming back home up 3-1 for game five tomorrow. That is how you have success playing away from home with those four lines.
So, the takeaway from four games and a 3-1 series lead is what for you?
Sabres have found their game. Sabres have found their game. It wasn't their game in game one other than the 8 minutes to end the third period. They didn't play well in game two. Game three, it got to the Sabres game halfway into the contest. And really, it was 1-0 Boston. Penalty shot. Arvidsson comes in. Alex Lyon makes a big save. Then you get to your game. That was a big turning point of that series. Penalty shot at 1-0. 10 minutes left in the second period. A minute later, Sabres score, make it 1-1, take over, win the game. But game four, they got to their game. It took them 2.5 games to get to the point they wanted to be maybe in game one. They didn't get there in game one or game two, but they found their game in Boston. That was a really solid two games there to be able to not just come back with the two wins, but come back with your identity that you had been searching for.
If Punxsutawney Phil popped up and said 6 more weeks of no power play goals, would you take it? Yes, because you'd be in mid-June.
I would take it because you'd be like in mid-June, meaning you'd be
so
in the Stanley Cup final. But here's the problem.
Scoring on the power play, I could care less. Long may the narrative last or the talking point last. Just keep winning. It hasn't affected them yet.
It hasn't affected them yet. But eventually, over the next 6 weeks, the power play is going to have to score for you to get there.
Maybe not.
It will. It will. I can guarantee you that's a bet the farm situation that if you don't get a power play goal, you're not playing six more weeks.
I would bet you on that.
No power play goals. They're playing another 6 weeks?
Yeah.
Okay. We're betting the farm.
All right.
That means you have to take care of my chickens or I have
to. We used to have a farm back in the day.
You did not see the handshake. You missed the handshake.
That was conveniently executed by me.
Exactly.
Could have done it on this camera too, and you might not have seen it.
Which is fine. It's fine. Listen, it's fine because I think that was a pressing issue going into game three and game four. Can't score. Yeah, the series was tied 1-1. Mm. Now you're up 3-1. It's not a pressing issue because the 5-on-5 has overcome your power play issues. And in game four, I felt like it's not a power play goal, but it was a second and a half after the power play had expired. You get that goal. You got another power play, and Zucker had a great chance in front of the net. And then the 5 minutes, which it's late in the game. The game is out of hand. You're not trying to score, although you give up a shorthanded goal. But I didn't think that the power play looked bad the last couple of games. Mm-hmm. They looked better. They had chances. They had the puck movement. They had the zone entries. It hasn't scored a power play goal, fine, but at least it's looked better. So to me, that's one thing.
Do you think the debate is fun and healthy, though?
The debate is absolutely
like the coach
fun.
Saying it's a power play goal.
Oh.
Doan making sure to reiterate after that it's a 5-on-5 goal.
Benson says we'll take it as a PP goal, in his interview. So it is a good debate.
And there have been obviously changes already through four games, including Noah Östlund in the mix. Did you see anything from Noah that helped? I mean, obviously, they had a power play in the third period where Östlund missed the empty net after the Tage setup.
Yeah.
That easily could have been another one of these that we'd be talking about. Well, what did you see there with Austin?
So let me ask you a question. Mm. What is the biggest quality that the players are seeing when it comes to Noah Östlund?
For me, it's always been hockey IQ, and I think you hear that a lot.
Ding, ding, ding.
But let me just say this. Not that we ever really need validation in our current positions, but anybody who's been subjected to me yammering about Noah Östlund for better part of 18 months,
a year and a half,
is now understanding why I've been saying what I've been saying. I watched an unrealistic number of Amerks games over the last 2 years, and yeah, Noah's living up to everything we thought, and others, most importantly, because you need an opportunity, he's earned the right to be in these moments.
And that's why I think that I put Noah Östlund on the second power play unit and giving them that opportunity in the bumper, but could switch position with Doan or Benson, depending on what they do. I think the hockey sense and hockey IQ is what has made that unit now create and get that goal. Like, it wasn't a power play goal, but they were the unit that were looking to set up that play. Doan turning his back to McAvoy, getting a stick on it. But Oslin in the middle of the ice, being able to draw players to him and knowing when he's drawing those guys, what is going to be open. I think the hockey sense and hockey IQ is huge. And now you move Tuck to the top unit and you put Tuck in the bumper position. I really think that's another guy that has great hockey sense, great hockey IQ, that knows how to play that middle, and it's going to help that top unit as well, having Alex Tuck there now as opposed to, having to figure out what they're doing with that top unit.
Quickly on Alex Lyon before we get to the stupidity and nonsense that ultimately and almost inevitably happened yesterday.
So here's the thing with Alex Lyon. In a game where it was a blowout, four goals in, 10 minutes, I feel like in the second period, Boston had some opportunities, and the calmness and the focus of Lyon really made a difference. He did not, one bit in the game felt like, oh, it's 6-0, I can let my guard down, or at 4-0 for that matter, because one goal in Boston could have been a big difference, right? I think he was solid and exactly what the Sabres needed, even in the blowout win. So I think that's a good sign moving forward. And again, a sign that the Sabres can have Lyon go in on the road, play well, at home, play well. Luukkonen can come back in. It's going to be like that for the next 6 weeks. I think that's more probability that you're going to get both goalies back and forth in the next 6 weeks than go without a power play goal.
Well, Lyon is 2-0 with a .89 goals against. It would have been that much better had they not scored shorthanded in the last minute to wreck the shutout. But .964 in his three appearances, and the team save percentage is .906 right now. Through the first four games, which is pretty much on par with where it was in the regular season. Oh,
stupid
hockey.
Season?
Huh? What?
Stupid season? We're talking about the stupidity now?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, good.
Well, seems unavoidable. It is April, and it's the NHL, after all.
I think it's the boost of hormones into everybody that gets to the playoffs.
Yeah, I'm just glad that here, talking about Zadorov on Dahlin, and it only, and expectedly being a $5,000 fine, which is the max or whatever. I'm just glad Dahlin didn't get hurt, because imagine how this would be playing out if he did.
Yeah.
Like, it's so stupid and so reckless. I don't understand why it continues to get condoned in the form of no suspension. Like, just make it a standard practice that stupidity like this, especially in the final 10 minutes of a game, is going to be worthy of sitting out the next game. It's not that hard to do. In fact, it was in place when I played minor hockey 40 years ago.
Yes.
That if you took infractions late in a game, you weren't going to play the next one. Like, I get the stakes and all the rest of it, but I'm just sitting here thankful that he didn't snap Dahlin's arm.
Yeah, and I agree with that part. I'm glad that no injuries and everything was fine. What Lindy Ruff said after the game about Zadorov, saying if it was the regular season, he probably would get suspended a game, and it's playoffs. And then I rewatched it multiple times from all the angles that were provided. And after watching it 20 times, I'm like, nah, that's okay. He's not going to get suspended. I'm okay with it. It was a cross check in the arm. I mean, if he catches him in the neck, in the head, that's five games. That's seven games. That's whatever, right? That's an in-person hearing. Mm-hmm. He got him right in the arm. No big deal. The punch didn't connect. No big deal to me. I understand the frustration. And Lindy Ruff said it perfectly. He understands the emotions in that part. And he's been there. I've been there. I get it. But, is it a stupid move? 100%. Am I glad Dahlin is not hurt? Yes. Look, The Sabres had six guys on the ice when that happened and six guys in the scrum. Mm-hmm. If the league wanted to be briefly, but because they grabbed Benson and threw him in the penalty box. Mm-hmm. But if the league wanted to be like a little bit really like walking the line on it, they could say, hey, you had a guy jump off the bench and joining the scrum and we're going to suspend for that, which that would have been stupid to do because the play was dead. You know, so you're going to a line change. Guys are getting on the ice, getting off the ice. And Zadorov started something after everything was diffused. Mm-hmm. So you can't fault the Sabres for you're not going to look around. One, two, three, four. Okay, I'm fifth. I'm good. I can go. I cannot go. But the rules are the rules. And I'm okay with giving them a $5,000 fine, whatever. I think it could have been a lot worse. Darlene's not hurt. The cross check was on the arm. The punch didn't connect. We move on.
We do. And the Sabres move up as far as the odds are concerned, as you would expect. Although, still an awful lot of work to do, including Game 5 tomorrow night here in Buffalo. But Eastern Conference teams, we've already seen Carolina move on. From a Sabres standpoint, you look at the odds, and Tampa is at plus 280 after their come-from-behind win against Montreal to even their series at 2. The Sabres are now plus 500 to win the East.
It's funny how Tampa is at plus 280. Montreal Canadiens are at plus 1,000. The Canadiens were up to nothing in Game 4 to go up 3-1 in the series, and there's such a big gap between Tampa and Montreal in the odds.
You thought I was going to be right, huh? Last thing I said Friday, Montreal will go back to Tampa up 3-1.
Up 3-1. It was really close.
What a comeback.
And we'll talk about it a little bit more in the show. But, yes, it was a big game. But, look, the odds, I'm fine with Buffalo where they are moving up. Obviously, Colorado sweeps L.A. They're tops at plus 230. Carolina sweeps to win the cup. Carolina sweeps Ottawa. They're at plus 320. They're the top two teams in the odds to win the Stanley Cup this year. Then it goes Tampa and Buffalo. Same Buffalo staying in the top four. That's where I think they should be. They haven't closed out anything in the first round. You got a big game 5 tomorrow. You know, it could go 6. It could go 7. Who knows? But I think this is accurate for the first time since the playoffs started where Buffalo should be.
All right, game 5 tomorrow, home at KeyBank. It's a 7:30 start once again, and obviously we look forward to being with you with our pregame coverage starting at 7, and with it, the opportunity here for the Sabres to eliminate the Bruins for just the third time in franchise history. This is the 9th all-time series, and to you, the biggest, I don't even know, like, I guess one thing I would want to, since we just mentioned him being on the receiving end of the Zadorov crosscheck, what are you expecting from Rasmus Dahlin? What have you seen from Dahlin? What would you say if someone had said, oh yeah, the Sabres will be up 3-1 through four games, no power play success, and Dahlin has 1 point in the series?
I would say somebody else better have stepped up. I think Dahlin and Samuelsson have been good. Yeah. I think they've been really good. And the offense maybe for Dahlin would come in the form of power play points, and the power play hasn't produced in four games. Power play is 0-4 April. They got one more chance to get a April power play goal. Tage Thompson has one more chance to get his lone power play goal for each month this year. October, November, December, January, February, March, and April would be the last game that they can get it. I'm fine with Dahlin. Dahlin has been doing a lot more behind the scenes and that you don't notice in this series. Even the bad penalty he took, that was game 2, I believe, where, you know, interference, he came in, laid the boom. Like, that's a bad penalty to take. But at the same time, it just builds up what Dahlin is trying to do, the physicality. There was a couple plays in game 4 where David Pastrnak was going for pucks in the Buffalo zone. Dahlin is on him. Pastrnak sensed Dahlin coming. He either stepped out of the way to allow Dahlin to get to the puck, and one time he tried to reverse it, Dahlin, but it really wasn't a try. It was a bailout, and Dahlin got the puck. I'm like, okay, that's what Dahlin has been able to do. Impose physical play and physical will that has now carried over in simple plays from the Boston Bruins to make, but they don't because Dahlin is coming to get the puck. So I felt like that has been Dahlin's involvement way more than what the points have been or not been. I feel like he has been a big part of where the Sabres are at 3-1.
Entire group of six defensemen has been really good without question, and we're expecting the same group to lace them up tomorrow for game number five. Now, as far as the forwards are concerned, that could be a little different. Obviously, we saw Kozak and Zucker leave the game in the third period a little bit early. Lindy Ruff telling the media today that Kozak and Zucker are probable for game five, but still being evaluated. And, of course, there's the possibility still of Josh Norris. How might this look in your opinion for tomorrow?
So Lindy Ruff mentioned after the game yesterday that both Kozak and Zucker were set to return. They were eligible to come back. They went to the locker room. We're going to come back. And then he says, don't need to. 6-0. They were a 5-minute major penalty. We don't have to. Yeah, they gave up a shorthanded goal, but didn't matter. Did not need to force it. Start your treatments, take your gear off, shower, get ready for game five. I would give Norris a little bit more time. I think that this lineup has looked good the way that it is right now. Oslin has fit in really well in the place of Norris. I would not force Josh Norris in for game five. And I go back to when the Sabres won 10 games in a row in December. Jason Zucker was ready to come back. And at one point, he's like, maybe I was the problem because since I've been out there winning. But he was ready to come back. And it took a while for him to get back in the lineup because they were winning and because the lines were good. And you didn't need to force Zucker back in the lineup. I don't think you need to force Norris back in the lineup for Tuesday night game five. I think if it was a game seven, it'd be a different story. But for game five, you probably can go with Kozak and Zucker. They were going to return, so they're fine. But Norris, I would give him a little bit more time. And also knowing that if it doesn't happen in game five, you can't close it out. You don't play until Friday. You have Wednesday and Thursday of no games too. So you have that chance to give him a few more days before needed him back in the lineup.
Is there a first star of this series so far for you?
Bo Byram.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah. It's by far Bo Byram. And I'm looking at, Tuck has been good. But I think the one guy that in the wins, in the losses, in the games that weren't great, game one wasn't great for the Sabres until late, Bo Byram was making a difference. I look at, the Sabres scored their goals. There's 6 goals in game four. Mm-hmm. And they basically pressured Boston into turnovers all over the ice, behind their net, on the half wall, in the neutral zone. And a lot of what Bo Byram has done is what everybody else is trying to do. You know, like Dahlin pinching on the wall on the geeky turnover, right? And that led to Malenstein's goal. That's because Byram has been doing that all series. Mm-hmm. And Dahlin's like, I'm going to pinch. It was 4-0 in the third period. And he's pinching on the wall. Why? Because he knows that the pressure on Boston is how you get to them, right? Mm-hmm. That's what you need to do. So for me, Bo Byram, the points, the goals, obviously, but more importantly, the pressure and the skating has been the best.
Goals in 3 straight. The club record is 4 in the postseason. That was done by Mike Ramsey from the blue line position. This is defense only. This is Ramsey's was in 83. That was the last game of the first round sweep of the Canadiens. That was a best of 5. So he scored in game 3, the capper, and then he scored in the first 3 of the series against Boston. Now, from a Bruins standpoint, as Buffalo has a 3-1 lead, chance to clinch tomorrow, a lot of emotional outbursts, usage of the word embarrassment over and over and over by the Bruins yesterday, and that was on the heels of a couple of changes for them to their lineup going into game 4. Yeah. What, if anything, will we see that's different from Boston tomorrow?
I think we may see Mason Lowry back in the lineup. Mm-hmm. Look, I felt like Lowry had been playing decent for the Boston Bruins. Yeah, he took a hit in game 3 that maybe, but it wasn't what Coach Sturm said was the reason he was out. He just said, he didn't love his game. He's made some bad plays with the puck. I didn't think that Harris coming in really had 2 bad turnovers. He didn't look right. So I think that you're probably going to reinsert Lowry in for Harris and put Bat Higgins up front on the Fraser-Mitton and Hustadinov line. I think you're going back to the lines the way they were and to the personnel that you had in game one, two, three, because game four was definitely not what you wanted to. And Marco Sturm says that was embarrassing. Charlie McAvoy, that's an embarrassment. We're embarrassed. I think you're going to get a desperate level. Like Lindy Ruff said, why is it so hard to close out series? Because the team that is one loss away from going home, their desperation level goes up 10 times, 20 times, 50 times. And I think that is what you're going to get from Boston. But I think you're going to see Higgins and Lowry back in the lineup.
But this Sabres group has not had yet this opportunity to, you know, you talked about it, Lindy talked about it after the first two games where they experienced a playoff win, they experienced a playoff loss.
Yes.
They don't know yet what the feeling is like to go through an entire game trying to eliminate an opponent. Mm-hmm. Some guys, obviously. Some already know it, just not here in Buffalo. What is the greatest challenge within that for this group?
Well, the greatest challenge is to stick to the game plan and what you know is working. Because there's always a part of you, human nature, that's like, oh, you know what? Like, I'm just thinking about the next series. And I've been there. In 08 with the Flyers, we're up 3-1 to Washington. We go to Washington for game five, and we lost that. And then we come home for game six. We lost that. We had to go back for game seven. We eventually won it. And in the second round, we had a chance to close out Montreal in five games. We did. It was a different mindset. And you saw how the players played. Now, the biggest thing for me, different from that Philly team that I was on, we had a lot of young guys that didn't have a lot of experience and maybe took the easy road, right, to trying to get by Washington that year. It took the long way to game seven. I think Buffalo, everything they've done this year, they've done by playing, you know, blocking shots, physical, sticking to the structure, playing the type of games they've been wanting to and have been trying to for a year and a half. Lindy Ruff has been saying that for a year and a half. So I really feel I'm seeing maturity out of the Sabres that I don't expect or anticipate a letdown. I expect and anticipate even more of what we saw in the first period in Game 4, where the Sabres had 12 scoring chances. Boston had 11 for the whole game. You outchance Boston in 20 minutes of play to their 60 minutes of play. That's what I expect to see, because I think that's how this team is wired in Buffalo.
And I would expect to see the jackpot number go up and up and up for the Sabres, 50-50. It's the Game 5 50-50 raffle presented by Northtown Automotive, featuring a guaranteed $150,000 jackpot. Keep in mind, the last two have been just shy of $400,000 when it was all said and done. Don't miss out. Winning ticket gets pulled during the game after the second period tomorrow night. Visit Sabres.com/5050. You can get your tickets now.
Get back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Rolling along here with another opportunity for you to win. You can play the game of the night presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Scan the QR code on the screen here on MSG right now or visit Sabres.com/Seneca to play. Good luck. Great opportunity. And of course, huge opportunity ahead for the Sabres tomorrow night in Game 5. As they lead the series 3-1 against Boston, there will be, you know, determination tomorrow as to who's ready to go from a Sabre standpoint. Obviously, at this point, it's looking likely that Zucker and Kozak can be good to go, but they're being evaluated. The Bruins may well have some concerns of their own.
Well, we did see Victor Arvidsson only play four shifts, and halfway in the first period, he got crushed by Matthias Samuelsson. The corner left the game. He is questionable for tomorrow, and so is Nikita Zadorov. I know we just talked about him and the play on Dahlin and the $5 fine that he got. $5,000 fine that he got. But he was kind of questionable going into the game because they have Henry Jokiharju take warm-up yesterday because there was some concern about Zadorov missing a couple of shifts in Game 3. Mm-hmm. So now Marco Sturm said Arvidsson and Zadorov are questionable for Game 5 tomorrow night.
I'd like Henry's hot take on the Bruins' performance yesterday in Game 4, where Buffalo had 12 players with points, including four with multi-point games, and the Sabres are 7-0 all-time when leading a series 3-1. Here's how it looks across the NHL through the bracket formation. If Buffalo can get things done tomorrow, they will undoubtedly have a lot longer layoff before Tampa and Montreal come to its rightful conclusion, because that series is even at 2 and showing no signs of ending imminently. Carolina was able to get rid of Ottawa in 4. Philadelphia and Pittsburgh play tonight, with the Flyers having a second opportunity to eliminate the Penguins. Mm-hmm. And then when you flip to the West, I mean, Colorado moved on yesterday. Dallas and Minnesota is everything that we expected it to be, even at 2. Utah's up on Vegas. They will play game 4 tonight as the Mammoth lead that series 2-1. And, of course, the Oilers are in a lot of trouble, which is, I think, the only prediction I've got likely to be wrong here in the first round, as the Ducks have been rolling against the Oilers. But over the weekend,
I think I had Pittsburgh. Did you have Philly?
I did.
Yeah, I remember you did. I was a little surprised, but yes.
Hey, let's do it kind of chronologically, because maybe you missed it on Saturday, but like, what a game between Minnesota and Dallas yet again. Like, this was the most obvious it will go 7 series of all of them.
Yeah, well, it's funny because I did not watch a ton of the first 3 games because there was some conflict with other games, and I got to sit down and watch this one on Saturday. And when Marcus Foligno's tied it with 5.5 minutes left in the game, what a play, him getting to the rebound, jumping over the goalie to make sure that he could get to the back end. Quinn Hughes broke Colin Blackwell's ankles trying to turn around. But it was a really nice play. And then they get to OT. They had gone to double OT the game before. And, you know, Matt Boldy with a great deflection. He thought he had scored earlier in the overtime with a kicking motion. It was waved off right away. But another deflection. So now this series is tied 2-2. You've got Wallstedt with Minnesota playing extremely well. Ottinger bouncing back after giving up 6 in game 1. This is a series that is heated, physical, but really fast, and everybody's playing hard.
What do you think of Ryan Hartman's goaltending?
Well, that was like the save. Like, it was all Dallas in overtime until Ryan Hartman jumped over everybody. He missed it with his hand, with his stick, and then was able to get his right hand on it. And what I like about this is it's hard to see on the replay, but the referee's right there. Mm-hmm. He did not cover the puck. He sweated it out. If he covers the puck in the crease, it is a penalty shot, but he used his hand to just move it aside. And then there was another shot that he was able to block. So Hartman saved the game, and it actually gave Minnesota life to be able to win that game in OT.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, Matt Boldy does it again. I mean, this kid, I really think, like, you know, from his draft year and the World Junior that followed it, like, he's been... there's just something incredibly unique about him. Obviously, the talent is what allows him to play for Team USA, but there's always been this incredibly high impact in big moments situation, you know, situational ability, situational awareness. He's so poised, and I think back to when we interviewed him, you know, around the combine in his draft year, and it was just like... You know, like so many of them, they're so baby-faced at that point in time. But there was just this it factor about Boldy, and I'm so happy that it's played out that way. Like, he's just such a treat to watch. If you're ever looking for another franchise to just kind of latch onto in the middle of an 82-game regular season, like, watch a lot of Minnesota hockey, and you'll probably have a better understanding of what I'm trying to say, which is probably not spitting it out particularly well.
2 goals in game 1. Yeah. They won that one. A goal in game 4. That was a big goal. And look, Minnesota at even strength is outscoring Dallas of 11-3. Now, Dallas is 8-19 on the power play.
Elite.
So it's power play Dallas, even strength Minnesota.
How about in the Atlantic matchup last night, Tampa and Montreal? This is a Habs team that was so close in their, you know, it was in their grasp, a 2-0 lead. And they lose on home ice in game 4 and now head back to Tampa.
Not
it's
OT.
All even. Not OT, but there was the massive hit, of course, in the second period that crushed Slavkovsky. Crozier delivered it. Thankfully, Slavkovsky played in period number 3. And we're not talking about, you know, anything more than just the violent nature of that massive mid-ice collision.
Oh, it was a hard hit, but it was a clean hit. Listen, he got the puck, he turned. Crozier was coming in, lined him up. And then, you know what, Madison took a slashing penalty on that play, and then Hagel took another penalty 30 seconds later, went 4-on-4, Tampa scores on the 4-on-4 late in the second, almost tied it before the end of the period, with Dobesh diving back with a stick. And then Oliver Kapanen took a high-sticking penalty on, I know the guy.
Was it Gensel?
No, it was...
I'm blanking
anyway, but I know who that is. That's somebody lower in the lineup. But nobody had the replay of the penalty. They all thought it was embellishing because he snapped his head back, but you didn't see the stick. The stick was the frames before. You didn't see it. And then finally, I think it was Sportsnet, Hockey in Canada, showed a full ice view of the play, and you realize it's a ice stick. Well, you know what? Hagel scores on the power play, and Hagel scores later. He's got six in four games in the playoffs so far. Duffer's favorite non-Sabre player, while he was a Sabre before, just never signed. But Hagel with two big goals, one late for Tampa to win.
Kucherov fired it towards the goal. It caught everybody by surprise. Probably Hagel, too, as it ricochets in off of him as he is parked right in the edge of the blue paint. He is absolutely something right now.
I felt bad because Ken Danico on NHL Network is like, you really have to tie your guy up back door. I'm like, well, what is Mike Madison supposed to do? He did everything he had to do.
He needed more rope. He'd already used the allotted amount. Oh, my
Dominic
goodness.
James was the guy that took the high stick on Kapanen. And I'm like, I know who that is. That's not a household name in Tampa, but he's been pretty good for them this year.
Well, and he has, and this is, I always see these through the Cooper Impact and Trust lens. John Cooper, and again, when you have the high-end talent that he's been blessed to work with, whether it's instinct or something else that allows you to then try to extend that trust and present opportunity to others. Cooper's had a beautiful knack over the years of just allowing talent from other leagues to come in and find their way to do it with this group. I think James is just one of the latest examples. Yep. I always thought he did a wonderful job with Ross Colton when Colton was making his way into the NHL. And those are just two.
Now, Johnny Gourde went his first time there.
The Lightning were so full of so many characters that were instrumental in their success, obviously. But now you're looking at Brandon Hagel and Jackson Lacombe as the Conn Smythe favorites right now in the NHL. And don't even bother starting the argument. It's those
it's
two.
It's Hagel.
Jackson Lacombe, let's get to it. I mean, Jackson Lacombe and the Ducks have scored 20 times
in four games
against the Oilers. And Jackson Lacombe is leading the playoffs in scoring right now. From the defense position. He also clocked Hyman with a reverse Forsberg
game one
early in the series. So when you look at what the Ducks are doing right now, how are they doing it, and how bad is this for Edmonton?
Well, you know what they're doing is they're doing it with the Oilers getting subpar goaltending, and that was going to be a problem. I didn't think Jarry was to fault, really, in Game 4, but you know what? It doesn't give you the confidence to say, hey, we're going to play our game. I still don't think that Connor McDavid is 100%. He did flip his ankle in Game 2, went to the locker room, came back. It has not been great. He had a really, really good burst of speed around the defense. He tried to go around Dostal, did not put it in, but he had that one burst. But I don't think Connor McDavid is 100%. And then you have controversy. Well, I didn't think it was controversy. I think it's clear the puck is in the net, and the NHL made the right call. I get that, you know, what happens in overtime, you got a review that the referee said it was a good goal on the play. They're not in position to see the puck over the line. That was the mistake the referees made, but the NHL got it right. They went to review, and even though you don't see the white between the puck and the red line, you know, it's like when you know by the width of the puck, by where the puck is, by the width of the blade of the goaltender, you know the puck is over the line. Just like if the puck is in your pants and it's in the back of your pants and your pants are over the line, you could say the puck is in the net. Same thing with the webbing. That was conclusive evidence for me that the puck was in the net. Would I have liked to have seen white there? 100%. Would I have liked that Scotty Bowman red line, Duffer? He wants a small little red line that is the width of the puck behind the goal line, that if it touches that line, you know it's clear, the goal line. Would have been 100%. I still think they made the right call. I just think that the referees kind of blew it by saying it was a goal originally when nobody could see where the puck was.
Paling the winner, apparently, Lacombe, not yet in the top 15 in Conn Smythe odds. But he
will be after today's show.
Some people
show.
Should watch the game. That's all I'm saying. Time for D&D.
Dazzled and
disturbed.
All right, so this was your topic, and I'm assuming it's disturbed.
Disturbed. So Saturday, Ottawa got swept, and in a fight, at center ice in the second period, Ridly Gregg came in and sucker punched Sean Walker while Walker was already engaged with another player. At first, you're like, "What just happened?" Right? Like you couldn't see it, and the referees on the ice obviously were attending to other things. They did not see what happened, but Ridly Gregg walked away from this, where he just came in and sucker punched Walker right in the body as he's engaged with somebody else. Pay attention to right here, Gregg. Boom! He sucker punched Walker right in the ribs. Well, he now has a hearing with the Department of Player Safety. Their season's over, So a suspension will have to be enforced next year in the regular season, not the preseason, regular season. But that, to me, is going to be probably a two or three game suspension. It's just unnecessary, and that was disgusting by Ridly Gregg.
Empty netters are for winners. The Canes had two of them in their clinching game. Another dazzled for you?
Yeah, so Skylar Bell was just drafted by the Buffalo Bills. He went to UConn. We all know UConn's a big hockey school. Tage Thompson went to UConn. And so yesterday, before game four, Skylar Bell tweeted, "Let's go Buffalo," Sabres emoji. So he is a big UConn hockey, big hockey guy, got drafted by the Bills, and now already on the wagon for the Buffalo Sabres.
Dazzled on many fronts. It was an emotional weekend, and It was like an emotional hour yesterday, late afternoon, early evening, I guess. Don Stevens.
Not a matinee.
No. Don Stevens and Andrei Kopitar, hanging them up within the same hour was not easy. Don was incredible on the call through the Amerks' final game yesterday. They lose to the Marlies in the third and deciding game. Mm-hmm. And when the empty netter went in with about a minute to go, Don's call was perfect. And it was just, oh, man, what a shame. And you could just hear it in his voice because he was so proud of the effort. Yeah. And then when they came back for a brief post game, I would implore you to try to find the audio of it. He was just full of emotion, but full of always the perfect words and the perfect appreciation for the 40 years behind the mic. So, Don, congratulations again on the incredible run. And then watching Andrei Kopitar, I mean, I tell you this all the time. I grew up watching number 11 in this town, and Perreault was my hero. And I don't think in my later adult life that I've found myself attached to a player for many of the same reasons that I loved Perreault as a kid. It starts with wearing the number 11. It continues with being one of the classiest to ever play the game. He's the most respected probably in the game now as he steps aside in retirement for Andrei Kopitar. Mm-hmm. We talk about the superstars that we've witnessed in the game over the last 20 years and the fact that Kopitar quietly goes about that as the top five scorer in that period of time that he played and emerges as a two-time champion. Man, it was emotional watching him get eliminated and have the last game of his career.
Incredible. The referees were there cheering on him. And I would have liked the LA Kings to win a game and take it to five, but it wouldn't have been fitting if Andrei Kopitar's last game wouldn't have been in front of fans, if it had been to Colorado for them to lose the series anyway. So game four in LA, the fans chanting his name late in the game, recognizing what he's done for that franchise.
Quick, you had a rotating door moment in Dallas, Minnesota.
So Minnesota, Dallas had a fun moment when Maverick Bourque goes out to throw a hit. But then, as the Minnesota guy, I think it's Spurgeon, was on the bench, you got Ben that opens the door for Bourque to come in, but then Spurgeon says, "You know what? I'll use the door to get out." So there was a Middleton, Middleton got hit by Bourque and then just used the door to go back on the ice, and Ben was the one facilitating. Ben's never been one to facilitate anything for the opposition. I don't think he realized what was happening. He opens the door for the for Middleton to get out, but mostly for Bork to get back in.
Quick break, back to wrap up Sabres Live after this with birthdays, anniversaries, and more. Stay with us.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Winding down, we mentioned the Amerks and their season ending yesterday in Toronto. They fall to the Marlies 2-1 in that best of three. Would you expect Consta Helenius to be skating as an extra here in short
order?
Yeah,
I think Black Ace, right? I've done that in 98 and 99 with the Buffalo Sabres. You bring about 5-6 guys. I think the Sabres have a lot of defensemen, so I wouldn't anticipate a lot of defensemen. Maybe Mertka comes up and hangs around. Mm-hmm. Helenius, maybe a couple more forwards just to have skate as a group of 5-7 guys to be ready in case of injuries or need.
Well, quite a weekend in the National Lacrosse League, and for the first time in 4 years, we won't be talking about the Bandits going to the championship game and winning. An incredible, historic run came to an end for them in Georgia on Saturday night as the Swarm advanced to the semifinals and the Bandits will end on a three-peat, not to mention an incredible regular season that allowed them to be in a position that was unimaginable.
I mean, again, Bandit Land, the fans, the organization has been, you know, the best in the National Lacrosse League, and unfortunately it ends, but it was a great, unbelievable run by the Bandits.
And obviously there's a semifinal action moving forward with not a lot of the top seeds in the NLL.
Some controversy,
too. And controversy as well. Imagine how long a review would take on this. This is the anniversary of the Dave Hannon 4 overtime goal against the New Jersey Devils in 1994. And Marty Brodeur thought there was goalie interference then. Imagine the review at 2 a.m.
Well, yeah, no, this one is going to count. Was there goalie interference? Absolutely not. There was nobody in the crease. Well, maybe a foot, but didn't make contact. I think Marty was just tired and I was hoping for a call.
Dominator with 70 saves in that one. Today is Paul Byron's birthday.
37 for Paulie Byron. Still a young man.
You know him well?
Nope.
Not at all?
I wasn't here when he was here, so I don't know.
But he ended up carving out such a lengthy career,
I wasn't sure whether you got
maybe to
know. Maybe I said hello to him once.
All right, a guest from TNT in studio tomorrow. We'll see you then on Sabres Live.